Luce in for Aaron McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty in studio with Louisiana Revenue Secretary Richard Nelson. Good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for getting up early and coming in. I was thinking on the
before
phone.
Before the sun today.
This is a, yeah. Ruben always says, see you dark and early in the morning when we leave. So, sad truth to that. But we were just talking before we went on during the break, and it's very exciting where Louisiana is now, even compared to just like you said a couple of years ago. I mean, we have come to accept it's been the norm. We're 49th and 50th in everything, and that's not the case anymore.
You're right. I mean, I think that's one of the things I like to emphasize is we have kind of accepted this idea that Louisiana is going to be at the bottom of these lists and we can't get out of our own way. And I mean, now, I mean, honestly, the state is just in a completely different place than it was just 2 years ago. I think you can look at, obviously, I was involved in the tax reform that I think really moved the state forward significantly. That's been a problem for generations that's held us back. I know you had Cade Brumley on yesterday talking about education. I worked on that a lot in the legislature to up our literacy numbers, help elementary literacy. Like now we're 16th in the country. You know, we used to be 49th or something like that. So
that's amazing.
It's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, I think, my point is that, policy really makes a difference in these things. You know, it's not just words on paper. It's not just some guys arguing in Baton Rouge. You can really make improvements that change people's lives. If all the kids can read, it's a huge difference than what it's been, honestly, all of Louisiana history. And I mean, now we have a tax code that's one of the most competitive in the country, and you're seeing billions and billions. I think it's $70 billion just in the last couple months. I mean, it's a huge amount of money that's coming into Louisiana that's creating jobs, that's going to feed families. And it's really just night and day compared to 2 years ago.
And I think I know the answer. What do you attribute this turnaround to?
Yeah.
I mean, I would say it was a significant amount of work from almost everybody in state government. I mean, the legislature's worked really hard. They've gone in 15 different, special sessions or something like that. I mean, the governor gets up every day and, says, how can we fix everything in this state? And I mean, I know he calls me and a whole lot of people before, 6 a.m. That's how it works. But it's been a significant amount of work to, fix the tax code. Economic development agency was restructured. We had already done a lot of education front. They've continued that in the last couple of years, too. I think you're going to see the next 5 years in Louisiana will be nothing like it. You're going to see people moving here. You're going to see growth here that you haven't seen in our lifetimes.
Well, we've already seen a turnaround in out-migration for the first time in years.
We did, yes. It was only minimal. It was like 10,000.
But it's still right.
It's got the right sign in front of that 10,000.
An aircraft carrier takes miles to make a turn. And so
that's right.
We added about an aircraft carrier battle group, I guess, is what we added last year. So.
Well, let's talk about you mentioned tax reform.
Yeah.
And the difference in what's difference in
Yeah, so we had pretty much the most comprehensive tax reform that's ever happened in the United States. Like not even just in Louisiana history, but probably in the country. In 2024 we had a special session at the end of in November of 2024. And we basically rewrote the entire tax code. So we started with the most complicated, obviously most uncompetitive tax code. It had a lot of really burdensome taxes. It was in a very complicated way. So you had really high rates. You had to clip all these coupons to try and get it down. It was really riddled with special interest loopholes. And we really went through, cleaned most of that out. We lowered the rates. We now have the second lowest income tax rate in the country, 3%. It's flat 3%. Everybody pays the same thing. We did something similar for corporations. We lowered the corporate rate from the highest in the South down to just about average. We put some very competitive tax changes in there. And we also got rid of the corporate franchise tax, which is kind of a wealth tax on companies. And that's been something that's been a burden on the state since 1934. So it's been around for a long time. And that's one of those things that's been driving investment out of the state. And guess what? It was like we did this big reform in November of last year, and it's rich. Like billions of dollars just started flowing in. I mean, it was not easy. I mean, it was a very calculated plan to get this all done, but you've seen significant investment benefits of those changes have been almost astronomical.
Have we made some changes in inventory tax and things like that?
Yeah, it's a good question. So we have there's actually a constitutional amendment on the ballot. Obviously, we had Amendment 2 that failed in the spring. That was a very comprehensive rewrite of Article 7 of the Constitution. Mm-hmm. We have, there's an amendment on the ballot in, I think, April 18th of next year that will basically opt out of levying the inventory tax. And I'd say that's one of the last from us as far as competitiveness. We have a very uncompetitive tax on business inventory that I think keeps a lot of these bigger manufacturers, it keeps a lot of these, some of these bigger businesses out of Louisiana. And so that's going to be on the ballot April 18th. I encourage you to vote yes. But it basically will allow each parish to opt out of it if they want to, if they have the resources. And I think that'd be one of the best things they could do for economic development.
So if this goes through, then it'll go to each parish and they will be able to.
So basically every parish, their school board, their sheriff, and parish council, whatever, will be able to opt out of, if they all agree, they'll be able to opt out of levying the inventory tax. We also have an incentive about $15 million that the state will pay to them to make that election. So it kind of sweetens the pot a little bit. But I think from an economic development perspective, that's one of the most important things they could do. That's a terrible tax.
It's horrible.
Anyone that owns a business will curse it up and down every day.
The fact that you have to pay tax on the chair that you're sitting in this year and next year and the year after that. Those are just tough deals just in general.
What is the logic there? I mean, I know what the reasoning is. How do you apply logic to that, though?
Yeah, so
you're continually paying tax on old. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, so it's like if you have a Home Depot or something, right? Mm-hmm. Home Depot has to pay tax, like property tax, on all the weed whackers and everything on the shelves. So it's millions and millions of dollars. Well, if you have, say, like a big car manufacturer, right? Sure. Like they have in every other state in the South, you have a big car manufacturer, you have $100 million in inventory, maybe. And maybe even more than that. And you got to pay tax on property tax on all of those cars that are just sitting out there while you're building them. So it's very uncompetitive. Louisiana has the worst version, and that's why we're trying to have this.
And so there are efforts to eliminate that or change it?
Yeah, it's going to be on the ballot April 18th, basically to allow parishes to opt out. So it's in the Constitution. You have to amend the Constitution even to give the parishes just the ability to opt out of it.
But what would be the incentive for a parish to opt out of millions of dollars in tax revenue?
So most, about 40 parishes collect a relatively minimal amount of money from it because they just don't have a lot of inventory. There's not a lot of business there. And so the thought was, if you're, say, Ascension Parish on the river and you have these huge chemical plants and you're getting, $20 million a year from inventory, you can keep it, right? Everything's going great for you. But if you're a smaller parish like in rural North Louisiana and you say, I want to be competitive for a new lumber mill, I want to be competitive for, a giant car manufacturer, out of the tax, you might get $100,000 a year from it or something. The state will give you up to $15 million, which is 3 years of the collections. And then that way you can hold over for some period of time. And then, you can see that investment. You can see that growth coming from that.
Tell me about changes. You mentioned changes in your office.
Yeah, so we've done a lot, and I'm also the revenue secretary, so I'm in charge of 750 people, and that's they've helped me accomplish a lot of these changes. I didn't do it all myself, thank God. But we have we're in charge with collecting all the taxes for the state, sales tax, income tax, and we've made that significantly easier. I was joking that when I came on, I think there was the people before me or whatever. The idea was that. You had to go through as many clicks as possible to pay. You had to make it as difficult. You couldn't read the letters. And so we tried to go through and make the letters very easy to understand so that you know what you need to do. We tried to make it all electronic so that you can, scan a QR in our next round of the newest, bills and stuff that go out. You can scan a QR code. You can pay. You can get a payment plan. You can do all this stuff without ever picking up the phone and calling anybody. You can just understand everything and just make it as easy as possible. I told them, make the website as easy as possible. You don't through 3,000 things to get to the information, I feel like that was whoever designed the website was paid by how many clicks you had to make to get to what you were looking for.
Gee, where have we heard that before?
Yeah, definitely. And I just a testimony to that. It made it so much easier on our business. I mean, it is. You guys have done that very, very well. So I'm very thankful because I was part of the old school when we had to do a million things just to pay just sales tax. I mean, it was a headache.
Yeah, and we've made it so, we're trying to make it so that everything you ever need to do, you can do online in your own account and manage it, just like you can with, your Amazon bill or Amazon account, right? You don't have to go and call a million people. Mm-hmm. I've never talked to anyone at Amazon, and at least my wife spends a ton of money there, I think bought Jeff Bezos a yacht. But, I think that's the whole, we have a very, customer service mindset now, Department of Revenue. Everybody hates paying taxes, but we should at least make it as painless as possible, right?
Now, when you mentioned the tax reform, what kind of economic development progress have we seen since?
Oh, significant. Obviously, it's funny when I was running for governor, I used to joke, that you know, how do you get back at somebody for running against your governor? You make them revenue secretary, right? That's what you figured out.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, I used to, you know, come up here all the time. I come up to North Louisiana, you know, frequently. Mm-hmm. And everybody would say, you know, how do you make sure, you know, don't forget about North Louisiana. You know, we need
stuff
too. Because I'll tell you what it was, is we had a tax code that was completely slanted to basically industrial manufacturing on the river. Like, if you weren't that, pretty much were kind of out in the woods. And so now you have a very competitive tax code where I think North Louisiana, Central Louisiana are going to benefit significantly. You can see that, you know, obviously Meta is building a $10 to $50 billion data center up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's just a game changer. I was in Ruston a few weeks ago, and it's funny because the change in the attitude, now they're like, oh, well, welcome to Ruston, you know, like I'm landing in, you know, Dubai or something. You
right.
know, it's completely different than it was a few years ago.
Well, they do have
ago.
A Buc-ee's coming. You
yeah,
know, so.
They're going to have a Buc-ee's too. No kidding. But yeah, I mean, I think you can see you got the Meta project that's billions of dollars. You have the Hyundai plant in Ascension Parish that's billions of dollars. You have all these LNG manufacturers.
So exciting.
It's just, I mean, I think it is. It's good that it's spread out through the state. You know, it's not just in, you know, Cameron Parish and they're building another LNG plant. That's great. But it's not just, I think you're going to see in the next couple of years, even a more significant investment in Louisiana. It's really everywhere is going to be very competitive. And I'm excited about it, if you can't tell. I mean, I think it's the great news. I've been foolishly optimistic about the future of the state for a long time, and now I will say I'm confidently optimistic.
Well, and then how refreshing is this?
100%.
To be able to have this type of discussion as opposed to 2, 3, 4 years ago when it was, well, this is what we need to fix. These are the problems we have. This is why. And now it's, look at the progress. We've got a wrap. But thank you so much.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me.
You're speaking later today in Bossier.
Yes.
And so.
The Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, thank you. Richard Nelson, Louisiana Revenue Secretary. Have a great week. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Back Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
We spoke with Dr. Kate Brumley, Superintendent of Education for the state of Louisiana. Had some great news. One small change had a huge impact. Hear what he's got to say. Coming up after the local news, bottom of the hour, Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, and on the free Keel app.
Back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Dr. Kate Brumley shares some pretty awesome news. One small change equals a huge difference. Find out more right after the break. Louisiana Superintendent of Education next, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty.
Breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Micah McCarty on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, Louisiana Superintendent of Education, Dr. Cade Brumley joining us. Dr. Brumley, first of all, good morning.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Always good to be with you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Thank you for joining us. First thing we need to talk about is this federal government shutdown, and how is this affecting Louisiana education?
Well, look, we're certainly monitoring it. We are certainly staying in contact with school systems across the state. But at this point, I don't think that we've had any real interruption to the services being provided to students. And we'll just continue to monitor that.
Special ed employees, federal special ed employees, I believe a lot of them have been fired. Do we know if that's permanent at this point or no?
No, I mean, I saw that information just like you did, Aaron. We have really good connections there with the Federal Department of Education, Secretary McMahon, et cetera. They did not necessarily communicate out to the state's employment and personnel decisions, but I did see that. Certainly what we realize is even if those individuals are no longer at the agency, that special education laws across the country are still in effect. You know, the Individuals with Disabilities in Education Act, IDEA, is a federal law, and so we will continue to follow that here in the state of Louisiana to make sure students with disabilities get the services they need, regardless of whether there are employees at the United States Department of Education in that particular office.
Is some of that funding in jeopardy too, though? Could that be?
We haven't heard anything about special education funding. And in fact, I was with Secretary McMahon, about 6 weeks ago, and she was very clear that she had no desire to see any special education funding cut in Louisiana or through the country. She was very clear about that. So, in fact, I've only heard the opposite, that, you know, she wants to make sure that that funding is retained and possibly even increased. Now, she has been very clear, working alongside the president, that they have a desire to what she is calling return education to the states, what we would call close down the U.S. Department of Education. But she is saying return education to the state. So I guess that they are sorting through all of that. But no, I've not heard anything about reduced funding for special education in Louisiana.
Dr. Brumley, you just kind of led into my next question. President Trump was talking about wanting to eliminate the Department of Education, hiring McMahon under those auspices of what's the latest on that? Has there been any movement toward the elimination of the department?
Well, Secretary McMahon will tell you, if you ask her, she'll say, you know, the president hired me so that I could fire myself.
Right.
But, you know, we haven't seen that agency move to close. We have certainly seen personnel released from that agency. We've seen a few items shift to other federal agencies, but it would truly take a legitimate act of Congress to close the federal agency. So I think that they know that there is, in some ways right now, an uphill battle to close the U.S. Department of Education, but it is a fight that they are undertaking and they believe in, and they believe that at the end of the day that they will be able to shutter the doors on the U.S. Department of Education.
Big meeting with Bessie today, and one of the proposals you and your team have put together is, I'm like, developing a plan to decrease state testing for high school students. Please.
This falls in line with what we have been doing. You know, last year was the first year that students in grades 3 through 8 saw a LEAP test that was 25% shorter. So they saw that last year. We are moving towards, within the next couple of years, cutting the social studies test that students take in grades 3 through 8 and the science test in half, moving to only taking those in certain years. And our latest move is, instead of 6 required standardized tests in high school, we would move to 4, basically a comprehensive exam in English, math, biology, and civics. And so, you know, I am in the number whenever people talk about kids in Louisiana testing too much. You know, I believe that. And I have endeavored throughout my time to try to reduce that. And so at the same time, I believe that we have to test students. We need to know where they are, because if we don't, we can't make proper instructional decisions or finance decisions or policy decisions. So we have undertaken this over the last couple of years and moving forward in what I believe to be a strategic way, where, you know, we don't have kids sitting there in classrooms all day taking standardized tests, but instead we're giving more time where they're not doing that, and teachers can simply teach, not be worried about a test.
One of the problems that we've seen recently is truancy rates increasing, some parishes at an alarming rate. What are you and your office doing to address this?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think truancy and chronic absenteeism is very much a local issue. It's not a Baton Rouge needs to solve it for my local community issue. Now, Baton Rouge and the state, we can support that. But last year, A Harvard-Stanford study came out, and it was talking about Louisiana's remarkable, that was their word, remarkable academic improvements, but they said it was minimized in some way because of attendance problems. So we've simply been using our office alongside our State Board of Education to try and pull together juvenile judges and DAs and faith-based communities, et cetera, to communicate and network locally so that they can take on these particular challenges. And in fact, last year we saw a 2% reduction in absentee rates. We saw a 2% reduction in truancy rates. And what we are seeing so far this year, just through this additional attention and more of an all-hands-on-deck approach, we're seeing those numbers improve again. So we're happy about that.
AP scores for high school students. I know we're seeing some improvements there, too. That's really good news for a lot of our students.
Oh, Aaron, absolutely. So, I mean, we've been committed to, for those students who want to go to college or university, and that's what the family wants, can we bank credits for them in high school, either through dual enrollment or AP? And so we have seen just skyrocketing performance in advanced placement coursework in our high schools. These are courses that students can take. They're higher-level courses, and at the end, they're given a national standardized test on that subject. And if they hit a certain score, they earn college credit for that, and they don't have to take that course in college, like U.S. history or biology or et cetera. And so the latest round of numbers are just so good, and it's just really a testament to the work that teachers are doing out there to prepare students. I mean, across the boards, our standardized tests, Nation's Report Card, U.S. News and World Report, AP scores, you know, there's just no doubt the facts are speaking that Louisiana is the most rapidly improving state in the country for educational outcomes.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the when we go back to the truancy issue. Does that really go back to the pandemic? When education for the world changed, that really had an impact that we're going to have to crawl out of that for decades, probably, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think the way in which people approached education changed during the pandemic, and it became because in many cases the government was saying don't come to school. In many people's minds, school became more optional than it ever had been. And so working out of that is really important. And, you know, I mean, we are seeing more targeted effort from judges and DAs and school systems right now. And certainly we're pleased with that. But I agree with you, Aaron. I think that the pandemic mindset created a lot of the issues that are being faced right now in terms of absenteeism and truancy.
One of the things that I think has been so successful and many parishes have done it is removed cell phones from the classroom. Have you started to see some of the benefits from removing these cell phones?
They better because, you know, we were able to get a state law passed that prohibited cell phones during the instructional day. And so it is a violation of state law for a student to have on a cell phone on during the instructional day. And look, I was visiting with a group of teachers just last week and I asked them, I said, look, we're a year into this now. How's it working? Oh, mm-hmm. The best thing ever. Thank God we're getting time back. Kids are talking to each other, not texting at lunch. I have to prepare more content because kids are on task. I mean, it has really gone well. And I even saw a study that came out yesterday, and I can't quote or cite the source. I apologize, but it basically said that the stricter that the school is on enforcing cell phone policies. So for us in Louisiana, the stricter the school is on enforcing state law prohibiting cell phones, the more satisfied in the job the teacher is. So it was basically saying the stricter the enforcement of cell phone policy, the happier the teacher. Mm-hmm. So it was a little but big thing that we were able to pull off, and it seems to be making a big difference.
Absolutely. Dr. Cade Brumley, Education Superintendent, Louisiana, thanks for your time, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Have a great week.
Dr. Brumley, thank you so much. We're blessed to have you in your position, and keep up the good work. We appreciate you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
FM 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty. By the way, just an update, you texted Aaron already this morning.
Yes.
We got a report. Crystal's been kind of running Aaron back and, or not back and forth, but
keeping up with her, taking her to the hospital.
Took her to the hospital yesterday and went up there after surgery. I hadn't gone up there because I'm not going to go up there the day of.
No, that's right.
And I may even give it a day or two.
Right.
But just to, nobody wants to see a bunch of people in.
Crowded and.
In your room when you're still semi-loopy and.
Right. But according to everything we've heard, the procedure went okay. She's up. She's talking. She's
awake, not up.
You're right.
Yeah.
She's ordering the staff around, the hospital staff, and ordering them around, getting Cokes and. Having a good old time.
I think the phrase was, "Do you know who I am?" might have been said.
Absolutely, 100%.
So we've already heard from her, and she's doing well.
Right.
So in her absence this morning, I'm glad to welcome Thomas Avalone.
Well, thank you, Mike. It's a treat.
You might recognize the last name, and you might recognize the voice. You sound like your brother.
Maybe a little bit. You know, I do hear that, and I will take that as a compliment.
Louis Avalone's brother.
That's correct.
Now, you work with him now, but a lot of people might remember you from your previous business.
They might. It hasn't been too terribly long. Of course, I owned and operated MacCentric for almost 20 years up until
May
of this year. Yep. Got it started way back in 2006.
Okay.
So it doesn't feel like quite that long ago, but it's 19, 20 years. So earlier in this year, we kind of made a decision to put a pin in that. And I've kind of returned to the fold a bit as far as rejoining the family business.
You have a family business.
Right. The Avalone Door Company that my father started way back when in 1976. And then, of course, Lewis has been captaining the ship there for quite some time. So
yes.
As proud as my father was, or I like to think he was, of MacCentric, I know that me returning to work alongside my brother is something he's probably very pleased with as well. And then, of course, I've begun helping out as I can with his radio program that is on this very
American
station
Ground
as
radio.
Well with Stephen Parr. So just staying busy, but it's been a bit of a career change. That's for sure.
They've had some major upgrades to the studio and stuff too.
Oh,
there with
100%. It's beautiful.
And the reason. I just going back to MacCentric.
Uh-huh.
It was really some changes that Apple did, wasn't it?
You know, it's
you guys did great work. I mean, I brought stuff in.
Oh well, we always appreciated that for sure. So yes, Apple is something that it is something I'm very passionate about since I was a kid. I was a real Apple diehard all through the 90s back when you know there was some question as to whether or not there might be an Apple moving forward. So it's something I always felt very, very passionate about back after graduating from college. That was around the time Apple had begun opening up its own retail locations. And I had read online that the third Apple store to ever open in the world would be right outside of Dallas in Plano, Texas.
Okay.
So that was just too good an opportunity to pass up. So I put in a resume and interviewed, and I went to go work at that Apple store for a few years before thinking, you know what, we really don't have we did not have what was called an Apple authorized service provider.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had an Apple product, which at that time was primarily a Mac computer or an iPod, there was no iPad or iPhone at that point in time, you had to make a trip to Dallas, because I would serve quite a few customers from the Shreveport area there at the Apple store in Dallas. Apple has it's a very different company than it was 20 years ago. It's in a very different position financially. Right. It's quite larger. And they have made a lot of changes over the course of the last 4 or 5 years that kind of began to affect my ability to serve the customers.
How they supported their service centers.
Correct, in the way that, that I had always wanted to. So we just decided to make a little bit of a pivot.
All right. Thomas Avalone in for Aaron. Coming up after the news, top of the hour, by the way, Senator Bill Cassidy going to be joining us talking about the government shutdown and a few other things. Mikey McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, and on that free Keel app. FM 710 Keel. Mike M. McCarty, Aaron out. We did get an update just real quick. If you missed last hour, Ruben's already texted her. I wasn't going to text her. You texted her early.
I was expecting her to wake up to it way later, but apparently she's already awake. So
now Krista Chica from K94.5. Took her to the hospital yesterday because she was scheduled for early yesterday morning. Then I think they moved her back a little bit on her procedure. And then Chica went by yesterday afternoon and visited with her for a little while and said she's in good spirits and awake and
ordering the hospital staff around. Demanding things.
Everything looks good.
Right.
So just to give you an Aaron update, we have Senator Bill Cassidy. Thomas Avalone, by the way, good morning.
Yes, good morning to you. I'm still here.
Yeah.
I'm happy to be here.
He is in, you might recognize the name, even the voice. This is Louis Avalone's brother.
I am, when he claims me.
Yeah.
That is something I'm happy to cop to. So. Or as I'm also known in many circles, political radio, my stage name is Know the Other One. Which is again just fine. It was something, in all fairness, my mother called me that as well. Know the Other One, but I'm very happy to be here.
He's older, right?
He is a little bit older. He is
okay. I'm sending a text now. Bill Cassidy is supposed to be giving us a call.
Give us a call, Bill,
this morning. So we've got him scheduled to be on. By the way, later this morning we will speak with Royal Alexander about the Supreme Court hearing the redistricting argument, the Calais case. Mm-hmm. So we'll have him. We'll talk to him here in about 30 minutes or so. Right now on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, Senator Bill Cassidy joining us. Senator, good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning to you both, and good morning, Northwest Louisiana.
Thank you. Thomas Avalone is in for Aaron. Louis Avalone's brother is joining me this morning, just to let you know who else is online.
Hey, Thomas. Good to see you, man.
Good morning, Senator Cassidy. Happy to speak with you.
Let's talk real quickly about the Senator, the Schumer shutdown, and this really is what it is. I heard Ted Cruz last night say he thought that the shutdown is going to last at least another week. Republicans, y'all have held, 9 or 11 votes now to reopen the government?
Yeah, you lose a little track, 9, 10, or 11. The fact is, every time Schumer instructs, his people to shut down. And the reason that Ted, my good friend Ted Cruz, said that he thinks it may last a little bit longer, there is a rally this weekend in D.C.
Yes.
of like 230 far left groups, and they are so agitated. And so if you found a solution before they showed up, it would just take the wind out of their sails. And so it's been our presumption that there's no solution until after they have their far-left rally this weekend. And then maybe after that, they'll say, maybe we should put the American people before politics.
Yeah, this is you're referring to the No Kings rally. And I think there's even going to be an element of that in Shreveport, in downtown Shreveport. And I can't figure the logic on somebody who just, let's see, they screamed free Gaza for months and months, well, actually for years now, and President Trump did that. There's been no recognition of that, but they're calling him a king and a dictator. I can't get the logic there.
You can get the logic. It's hatred of Donald Trump. And in fact, some of my Democratic colleagues will say it's very good that the hostages are let go in Gaza, but they won't say Donald Trump did it. And so Donald Trump brought those hostages home, and it looks like he's creating, let's say, he ended the war. Now, there's some more steps to take. Let's be honest. It is the Palestinians and the Israelis, but he's made far more progress than anyone else has. And just, you know, one more time, the guy should get the Nobel Prize next week, Nobel Peace Prize. But that said, my Democratic colleagues won't even admit that. So on and on. It's a problem. It's Trump derangement syndrome. And until we get over a little bit of that, we're not going to reopen the government.
Well, which is a shame, because we have military members now that are not being paid. Although President Trump is working to get our military paid. What's the latest on that?
Yeah, so I and others are sponsoring legislation that would say, listen, even if we shut down the rest of the government, why don't we pay the people who are essential, who we know are frontline? That would include our military. That would include our ICE agents. That would include our air traffic controllers, that sort of person, Coast Guard. Those are the folks that are keeping us open. Let's allow them to keep their cash flow open. And let me just make a point. There's a human toll to the Schumer shutdown. A lot of those airmen and airwomen in Bossier Shreveport, they live paycheck to paycheck. That's just the life of somebody who's in their 20s. And now you're going to interrupt that paycheck. So while they're waiting for their rally to occur this weekend, there's going to be somebody looking at their checkbook saying, I don't have any money to pay the bills. So there's a human toll for the politics they're playing. We need to end the politics.
Senator Cassidy, Thomas Avalone here. Good morning. Based on your observations thus far and your experience in the Senate, do you anticipate that this will be something we are still talking about come December, come early 2026? How much longer do you anticipate the Democrats will kind of keep this ball rolling?
The longest we've had, I think, is 30, 35 days. I would hope it would end before then. There are essential services that you need to get. For example, National Flood Insurance Program. There are people in North Louisiana who need to have flood insurance on their federally backed mortgage mm-hmm. before they can close on their house. You can say, well, that's something you can delay. But reality is, someone sold their home, they've rented, they're about to move out of the rental, they want to move into their new home. That's the way it's supposed to work. And as sooner or later, that becomes disrupted. So there's just these little things that you think, oh, I forgot about that one. So Thomas, I'm hoping sooner, not later, but the longest it's been 35 days, but I suspect it stops before then.
Senator Cassidy, you're in New Orleans today. You're hosting a Louisiana Energy Summit.
Yeah, so energy is key to our prosperity, to our household budget, to when I say us, I mean Louisiana, but I also mean our nation, or to our international security, to our international competitiveness. And you can't take it for granted. Under the Biden administration, they did lots of things that they thought, and their crazy ideas, that it was good for our nation's economy, and our nation's economy suffered. President Trump is reopening all of our national energy resources, but you got to be deliberate, and you got to make sure that it goes beyond the next administration. So this is kind of celebrating Louisiana's role, but also pointing out the issues that are peculiar to Louisiana. For example, how do we make sure that when we build that big meta center in northeast Louisiana, that the rates remain stable for everybody living in our state? Those issues are true for us, but they're true for the rest of the country. How do we address it? And that's what our conference is about. About 500 attendees from across the nation, so very pleased about it.
We recently spoke with State Revenue Secretary Richard Nelson, who shared some really positive news when you look at the tax reform that was implemented in November of last year. And we've seen some really positive economic growth for the state of Louisiana because of this tax reform.
And so a lot of that is tied to Louisiana being a part of the energy and economy as well. If people are making more money, then they're going to pay more taxes. That's a good problem to have. Good tax policy is important, but so is good, let's create some good jobs type economy. I just saw today that India, going back to national security, which of course people in northwest Louisiana knew all about, that India is going to stop buying Russian oil and gas and going to replace it with oil and gas from the United States and elsewhere. Now, a lot of that natural gas is going to come from the Haynesville. That's mm-hmm. going to create more demand for more wells in northwest Louisiana. That's going to create more wealth for the workers and for the people that own the property and for the people that maintain the pipelines and for the people down in south Louisiana who have the LNG export facilities. They pay more taxes. It's a good problem to have when you pay more taxes because you make more money. So I'm glad that the reform is going well. Let's couple it with our economy growing strong, better jobs for families. And, I feel good about that cycle.
We're talking with Senator Bill Cassidy. I was talking with Thomas a little bit earlier. We've spoken with Richard Nelson this week. We had Dr. Kate Brumley on earlier this week. And I got to thinking, look at the direction Louisiana is going now as opposed to the last 12 years. And you can reflect on look at the direction the country is going now, because look at who is in charge. Look at the difference in the policies and the thinking. Donald Trump surrounded himself with a cabinet in this second term 180 degrees far different from the cabinet that he had in his first term. He learned a lot. And now look at the direction that that the country is taking.
Yeah, I agree with that. Good. United States is an engine, and it's always going to pulse forward. It's always going to go forward. But you can put policies in place, which Biden did, which just like put a little bit of water in the gas tank, and the pistons miss every now and then. But if you put that high octane in there, we're going to go forward. And why is that important? We're stronger militarily. So one thing I've been working on is getting money to Barksdale to strengthen their mission. But everybody in Bossier Shreveport is familiar with our military obligation. It creates better paying jobs, more jobs. We need more of that. And again, we see that in Louisiana. So I agree with you, Michael. We're hitting on cylinders right now, man.
Senator, I know your schedule's tight. Thank you so much for taking time to talk with us, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Hey, thank you both.
Thank you. Have a good morning in New Orleans. Mike and McCarty, Thomas Avalone in for Aaron, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty, Aaron Al, Thomas Avalone in studio for Aaron, and of course Cassidy. I just say he's got an uphill battle.
I would say,
especially based on folks listening to this radio station.
I would say so. I think it's shaping up to be an interesting
race. And I'm talking about his upcoming reelection.
Sure,
yeah.
Absolutely. I know a lot of folks are always very interesting to get some new perspective from him as far as his vote. You want to say way back when, but it wasn't too long ago to impeach President Trump. But also something that I, you know, comes to mind when thinking about that reelection campaign, of course, is that we've got two very solid Republican challengers in Dr. Fleming and Blake Miguez.
Blake Miguez.
There's a lot of money that's been raised and thrown around. I know Dr. Cassidy has raised over $10 million.
Okay, because that was a concern, that he wasn't raising much money at first.
And of course, he's Dr. Fleming, he has also made a bit of an investment, a lot of it personal in his own campaign. So it'll certainly be interesting to see how that shakes out as the months go on.
And Dr. Fleming is I think, more known in North Louisiana, obviously.
He is.
I don't know how strong he is in South Louisiana, but but being the revenue secretary, state treasurer, that's got to bump him up is in South Louisiana as well, because we know Blake Miguez is strong in South Louisiana. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of they both have kind of opposite situations going on in that respect. But like you said, Dr. Fleming, with his, you know, he did win statewide office, and I'm sure that campaign did a lot to raise his profile statewide. It's just a question of did it raise it enough, or will he manage to raise it even further as we approach next fall?
And the Trump effect will be interesting as well, because Dr. Fleming was on Trump's staff in his first term.
He was, and you know.
So you think he would come in and support Fleming, but it'll be interesting to see whether he does or not.
It is something that would be natural to think of as a possibility. I know that Dr. Cassidy here very recently on American Ground Radio had commented that he did not expect President Trump to weigh in at all, which is kind of an interesting tidbit. But we will certainly see. I think that just judging by your audience alone, folks do have rather long memories with respect to that vote, and it'll just be a question of whether or not he can overcome that.
Royal Alexander, Shreveport local attorney, is going to join us here in about 10 minutes talking about the Supreme Court hearing the Louisiana's redistricting Calais case. Mike and McCarty, Thomas Avalone in for Aaron, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
More breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Thomas Avalone in studio for Erin McCarty. Of course, she's out for a little while, and her surgery went well, so we've already talked to her this morning. Royal Alexander, local attorney, going to join us coming up just after the break, talking about the Supreme Court hearing the Calais case on Louisiana's redistricting. I also want to talk to him, hopefully, if we have a little time, about Mike Johnson getting a little pressure from House Democrats. And we'll cover that, too, as well. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Well, Thomas Avalone in for Aaron, Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Shreveport attorney Royal Alexander joining us. Royal, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Good morning, Lewis.
This is Thomas.
It's the other one, Royal.
Thomas.
I know it's, you hear Avalone, but
it's a fair assumption to make.
Okay, Thomas.
And he sounds exactly like Lewis, so he's easy to do. Royal, Supreme Court yesterday heard the case. Is there going to be more testimony on the Louisiana redistricting, or have they concluded the testimony and now taking it into consideration? What's this? Where are we on that?
A ton of material has been submitted at both from the parties and what we call amicus briefs, friends of court briefs, and so the Supreme Court, and this is the second briefing of this issue. It could have been decided a year ago, but the court wanted to hear whether or not specifically this map violated the 14th Amendment or the 15th Amendment. Of course, the 14th is equal protection. The 15th Amendment will prohibit denying the right to vote based on race. So the 15th Amendment is what gave rise to the Voting Rights Act. And it's really, there's a collision right now of two laws. One is a federal statute, the Voting Rights Act, Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. And the other is the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. And the reason there's a collision of the two laws is because the Voting Rights Act won't allow for the dilution, for the weakening of minority voting power. That's the Voting Rights Act. But the 14th Amendment, the Equal Protection Clause, says that may be, but you can't draw those districts based on race. So on the one hand, and so states like Louisiana, guys, get sued every time we have a census because Louisiana, like every state does, tries to abide by the Voting Rights Act. But when you do, you end up with a district like Congressman Cleo Field's district that starts outside of Baton Rouge, bounces over to outside of Lafayette, up to Shreveport, outside of Alexandria. It's almost like that Z district Mr. Fields had 30 years ago.
It looks like an F1 track if you look at it. I mean, it's just all over the place. They were even laughing at it on Fox News last night. Laura Ingraham had somebody on. They were talking about the Supreme Court hearing the case, and they brought up the district, and she goes, "Look at this district." It was embarrassing.
It was, and they've tried strenuously to argue. And again, our legislature passed that map, and you know our attorney general has an obligation to defend it, which she has done the whole time. But if you look at that map, even if now again, race can be a factor. Race just cannot be pretty much the only factor or the predominant factor. Race and people's demographics and whether or not you're agricultural or an oil and gas area or like those coal chemical plants on the Mississippi River. There's so many different interests in Louisiana to lump them together in that district that, you know, that they're laughing about, the one Mr. Fields is in. You really struggle to find another reason other than race, finding enough minority voters to justify it. Well, and I think that's what.
And they brought up an interesting point last night, Royal, talking to Royal Alexander, that Republican and Democrat doesn't always necessarily mean black and white.
It doesn't. And that's a form of racism itself.
Exactly.
And that point was made at oral arguments. Those are just, and our attorney general has argued, you know, five times herself before the United States Supreme Court, which I can't ever imagine doing. I think that would be awesome. The high point of an attorney's career to argue before the
right.
But but that's one of the points that always gets brought out. You're assuming that a group of a racial or a gender class all votes the same or thinks the same. And that's a form of racism itself. So but I love when Louisiana, it has a case, and occasionally we do, before the Supreme Court, this Calais case, C-A-L-L-A-I-S, Calais v. Louisiana. And but the reason this is such a, really, it's going to be an historic case is because if what a lot of the court watchers suspect they're going to do, I think Chief Justice Roberts, he just wants to get out of the business of using race in anything, college admissions.
Hallelujah.
Congressional redistricting. He's made comments like, it's a sordid business, this divvying us up by race. It's a sordid business, divvying us up by race. A lot of people agree with that. And
then when you have comments by Justice Jackson, who was saying a black Democrat won't vote for a white candidate and white Democrats won't vote for a black Democrat candidate. It's like, seriously? You're actually saying that? Did Barack Obama get reelected and was president twice? Was that all nothing but black voters?
I was surprised by her questions, but in a way, I appreciate her honesty because I think that's how she thinks. But I disagree. I have people, we have white friends, Mike, who are Democrats and vote for the Democrat every single time. And I know I have good friends who vote for Republicans all the time who are black. You can't assume, make assumptions like that. And I think it weakens the argument that, and strengthens the argument that we need to do away with race Totally. I mean, we've had it for 40 or 45 years now, back to the Bakke case in 1978, the original form of affirmative action in college admissions, and then it went to a number of different areas. But it's, and another thing Chief Justice Roberts said was, and think about the way he said this, he said, the way to stop discrimination in law is to stop discriminating in law. In other words, it just seems so simple.
It's very so, exactly.
You know, and he said, we've had this in our country for a long time. Whatever the problem may have been 40 or 45 years ago in the United States, we've come a long way. At some point, there has to be a sunset provision in this affirmative action or these racial preferences. At some point, we really have to just say the Equal Protection Clause, everyone. So what that would mean here, Mike, is you just have generally compact congressional districts. You don't have one like Congressman Fields. New Orleans is one chunk, the Baton Rouge area across, Lafayette is its own area. Every part of Louisiana is generally a compact congressional district.
Right. Royal, thank you so much. We appreciate your input.
Okay, guys. Thank you.
Talk to you soon. Micah McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 KEEL.
Of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 KEEL.
Thomas Avalone in for Aaron, Mike and McCarty. And in getting reports, you might have heard there is an active situation at Bossier Parish Community College right now. They've locked down the campus. There's several police on site. They're staged, I think, at the a dear friend of mine works there. He said load of police at the mobile home park across the street. And I just spoke with the chancellor, Rick Bateman, out at Bossier Parish Community College. He's obviously very busy right now, but he was gracious enough to talk with me for just a moment. He doesn't have time to go on the air right now, but he said there was a car with a suspect that came onto campus.
Oh, goodness.
And the suspect has run and possibly is loose on campus right now, so they are locking down all the buildings, trying to get all those buildings cleared. So as we get more information on that, we will let you know. But definitely, if you usually come up 80 there in Bossier from the Houghton area, I would take I-20. I wouldn't even try to go 80 right now.
Oh, yeah. That search could take a while, too. That's a big campus.
I think it's Dr. Bateman, please forgive me, said it's going to take a while. I asked if he could join us, and he said, not right now. We're
a lot of
in
random
the middle of all of that.
Rooms, nooks, and crannies, and it's early in the day, so not all of them are being
used.
Well,
it's probably one of the busiest times of the day right now on campus. So they've got a suspect on campus. Police and marshal units are there, so just avoid that area. We don't have any other reports in nothing specific.
Sounds like something may have occurred on a neighboring property at the mobile home park. And
across the street maybe, and the suspect took off and
found his way onto campus.
Onto the Bossier Parish Community College campus. So we are aware of that. We are on top of that, and we'll continue to try to find out more information. I've reached out to the public information officer, Lewis Johnson, for Bossier City. So as soon as we hear something, we'll pass more information on about that. Thomas Avalone in, thank you so much.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. It's a real treat.
You're like me. You're a longtime KEEL listener.
I have been listening to KEEL since I was 9 or 10 years old, I would say.
Well, we're glad to have you in this morning. Coming up next hour, if you missed our interview with Senator Bill Cassidy, we'll replay that, and we'll also try to get more information and keep you updated on the very fluid situation at Bossier Parish Community College. It's locked down. Avoid that area. Don't go be a looky-loo. And if you're on your way into work this morning, take I-20 as opposed to Highway 80. Mike and McCarty, Thomas Avalone in for Aaron, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com. right now on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, Senator Bill Cassidy joining us. Senator, good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning to you both, and good morning to Northwest Louisiana.
Thank you. Thomas Avalone is in for Aaron. Louis Avalone's brother is joining me this morning, just to let you know who else is online.
Hey, Thomas. Good to see you, man.
Good morning, Senator Cassidy. Happy to speak with you.
Let's talk real quickly about the Senator, the Schumer shutdown, and this really is what it is. I heard Ted Cruz last night say he thought that the shutdown is going to last at least another week. Republicans, y'all have held, what is it, 9 or 11 votes now to reopen the government?
Yeah, you lose a little track, 9, 10, or 11. The fact is, every time Schumer instructs his people to shut down. And the reason that Ted, my good friend Ted Cruz, said that he thinks it may last a little bit longer, there is a rally this weekend in D.C.
Yes.
of like 230 far left groups. And they are so agitated. And so if you found a solution before they showed up, it would just take the wind out of their sails. And so it's been our presumption that there's no solution until after they have their far-left rally this weekend. And then maybe after that, they'll say, maybe we should put the American people before politics.
Yeah, this is you're referring to the No Kings rally. And I think there's even going to be an element of that in Shreveport, in downtown Shreveport. And I can't figure the logic on somebody who just, let's see, they screamed free Gaza for months and months, well, actually for years now, and Trump did that. There's recognition of that, but they're calling him a king and a dictator. I can't get the logic there.
You can get the logic. It's hatred of Donald Trump. And in fact, some of my Democratic colleagues will say it's very good that the hostages are let go in Gaza, but they won't say Donald Trump did it. And so Donald Trump brought those hostages home, and it looks like he's creating, let's say, he ended the war. Now, there's some more steps to take. Let's be honest. It is the Palestinians and the Israelis, but he's made far more progress than anyone else has. And just, you know, one more time, the guy should get the Nobel Prize next week, Nobel Peace Prize. But that said, my Democratic colleagues won't even admit that. So on and on. It's a problem. It's Trump derangement syndrome. And until we get over a little bit of that, we're not going to reopen the government.
Well, which is a shame because we have military members now that are not being paid. Although President Trump is working to get our military paid. What's the latest on that?
Yeah, so I and others are sponsoring legislation that would say, listen, even if we shut down the rest of the government, why don't we pay the people who are essential, who we know are frontline? That would include our military. That would include our ICE agents. That would include our air traffic controllers, force, and Coast Guard. Those are the folks that are keeping us open. Let's allow them to keep their cash flow open. And let me just make a point. There's a human toll to the Schumer shutdown. A lot of those airmen and airwomen in Bossier Shreveport, they live paycheck to paycheck. That's just the life of somebody who's in their 20s. And now you're going to interrupt that paycheck. So while they're waiting for their rally to occur this weekend, there's going to be somebody looking at their checkbook saying, I don't have any money to pay the bills. So there's a human toll for the politics they're playing. We need to end the politics.
Senator Cassidy, Thomas Avalone here. Good morning. Based on your observations thus far and your experience in the Senate, do you anticipate that this will be something we are still talking about come December, come early 2026? How much longer do you anticipate the Democrats will kind of keep this ball rolling?
The longest we've had, I think, is 30, 35 days. I would hope it would end before then. There are essential services that you need to get. For example, National Flood Insurance Program. There are people in North Louisiana who need to have flood insurance on their federally backed mortgage mm-hmm. before they can close on their house. You can say, well, that's something you can delay. But reality is someone sold their home, they've rented, they're about to move out of the rental, they want to move into their new home. That's the way it's supposed to work. And as sooner or later, that becomes disrupted. So there's just these little things that you think, oh, I forgot about that one. So Thomas, I'm hoping sooner, not later, but the longest it's been 35 days, but I suspect it stops before then.
Senator Cassidy, you're in New Orleans today. You're hosting a Louisiana Energy Summit.
Yeah, so energy is key to our prosperity, to our household budget, to, when I say us, I mean Louisiana, but I also mean our nation, international security, to our international competitiveness. And you can't take it for granted. Under the Biden administration, they did lots of things that they thought, in their crazy ideas, that it was good for our nation's economy, and our nation's economy suffered. President Trump is reopening all of our nation, national energy resources, but you got to be deliberate, and you got to make sure that it goes beyond the next administration. So this is kind of celebrating Louisiana's role, but also pointing out the issues that are peculiar to Louisiana. For example, how do we make sure that when we build that big meta center in northeast Louisiana, that the rates remain stable for everybody living in our state? Those issues are true for us, but they're true for the rest of the country. How do we address it? And that's what our conference is about. About 500 attendees from across the nation, so very pleased about it.
We recently spoke with State Revenue Secretary Richard Nelson, who shared some really positive news when you look at the tax reform that was implemented in November of last year. And we've seen some really positive economic growth for the state of Louisiana because of this tax reform.
And so a lot of that is tied to Louisiana being a part of the energy economy as well. If people are making more money, then they're going to pay more taxes. That's a good problem to have. Good tax policy is important, but so is good, let's create some good jobs type economy. I just saw today that India, going back to national security, which of course people in northwest Louisiana knew all about, that India is going to stop buying Russian oil and gas and going to replace it with oil and gas from the United States and elsewhere. Now, a lot of that natural gas is going to come from the Haynesville. That's going to create more demand for more wells in northwest Louisiana. That's going to create more wealth for the workers and for the people that own the property and for the people that maintain the pipelines and for the people down in south Louisiana who have the LNG export facilities. They pay more taxes. It's a good problem to have when you pay more taxes because you make more money. So I'm glad that the reform is going well. Let's couple it with our economy growing strong, better jobs for families. And, I feel good about that cycle.
We're talking with Senator Bill Cassidy. I was talking with Thomas a little bit earlier. We've spoken with Richard Nelson this week. We had Dr. Kate Brumley on earlier this week. And I got to thinking, look at the direction Louisiana is going now as opposed to the last 12 years. And you can reflect on, look at the direction the country is going now, because look at who is in charge. Look at the difference in the policies and the thinking. Surrounded himself with a cabinet in this second term, 180 degrees from the cabinet that he had in his first term. He learned a lot. And now look at the direction that the country is taking.
Yeah, I agree with that. Good. United States is an engine, and it's always going to pulse forward. It's always going to go forward. But you can put policies in place, which Biden did, which just like put a little bit of water in the gas tank, and the pistons miss every now and then. But if you put that high octane in there, we're going to go forward. And why is that important? We're stronger militarily. So one thing I've been working on is getting money to Barksdale to strengthen their mission. But everybody in Bossier Shreveport is familiar with our military obligation. It creates better paying jobs, more jobs. We need more of that. And again, we see that in Louisiana. So I agree with you, Michael. We're hitting on cylinders right now, man.
Senator, I know your schedule's tight. Thank you so much for taking time to talk with us, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Hey, thank you both.
Thank you. Have a good morning in New Orleans. Micah McCarty, Thomas Avalone in for Aaron, 101.7 FM, 710 Key.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
FM, 710 Keel. Mike and McCarty, Aaron, of course, out. We did speak with her this morning. She's already texted me By the way, this situation going on at Bossier Parish Community College, they are on lockdown. The last I heard, it's been about 20 minutes since I've spoken with anybody. I spoke to the Bossier City Police spokesperson. I did speak to the city spokesperson as well. I even spoke to the chancellor there at Bossier Parish Community College, Dr. Bateman. They didn't have a lot of information at that time. There was a suspect that was involved. The report that I heard involved in a high-speed chase ended up being on campus from Highway 80, and then I think he bailed out of the vehicle, and so police have locked down the campus. There was a text that was sent out to all personnel and students to shelter in place, lock the doors, and the police are actively searching for this suspect. That's basically, I don't want to, Thomas Avalone is in for Aaron Lewis Avalone's brother. And I don't know if he's armed. I don't know. Apparently, it's a concern. Danger enough.
Certainly. What I was just reading here is that he crashed into a fence at a mobile home park or a nearby mobile home park, and then kind of found his way near campus. I was just reading a news alert that came across my phone here. So hopefully that is something that they will get resolved sooner rather than later.
So we have reached out to the Bossier City spokesperson.
They're waiting on information right now.
I just
got in touch with Lewis.
Lewis Johnson.
And he's going to the police right now to see what all he can figure out. Maybe we can get a hold of him a little later.
The Bossier City Police spokesperson, Sean Poudrier, I spoke with him. He said, give me a few minutes. He was just getting on scene at that time, so he's trying to get the latest information as well. So
it's a hectic situation.
Yeah, pretty crazy. My phone blew up. Stephen Parr.
I know him.
Yeah. Co-host with your brother Lewis was texting me about it. So we're on top of it. We're in touch with the officials, and as soon as we hear more, we will let you know. But as of now, I would avoid Highway 80 coming in from Houghton, from Louisiana Downs area. I would take I-20. I know that's a nightmare in itself with the construction, but with the police, from what I understand, they were kind of staging at the mobile home park
and
maybe across the street. So
apparently this all stems from a high-speed chase with state troopers, and the guy crashed and ran away, and he's still possibly on campus. So, yeah, if you're headed to campus this morning, go stop for breakfast.
Yeah, go to your favorite diner and hang out until you get notification. Thomas Avalone in for Aaron. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel. We did speak with Royal Alexander earlier about the congressional district's case being heard by the Supreme Court yesterday. Hear what he's got to say in about 10 minutes. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
It's hectic out here. Those are the words from Bossier City Police spokesman Sean Poudrier. There's campus is on lockdown, a suspect. Well, I'll tell you what, let's let him give us the details. Sean, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks, Shiv. Thanks for joining us. Tell us, I know it's crazy out there right now, suspect loose on campus. What happened and where are we at the moment?
Yes, sir. So this morning, Louisiana State Police initiated a traffic stop on what is believed to be a stolen vehicle. They were able to get the vehicle stopped across from Bossier Parish Community College. Three suspects fled on foot toward the trailer park or around the surrounding areas. They were able to take two into custody. One was seen fleeing toward the college campus. What is believed to be a suspect was seen black male wearing all black pulling on doors at the campus. They had him on camera. They can't see him now. So the campus has been evacuated, and it's currently on lockdown while SWAT members and state police and Bossier City Police and other agencies get a game plan to go in the buildings to search to see if he is actually on campus.
You've got drones active, and you guys are doing everything you can, right?
Yeah, yes, sir. We have drones active out here now. We've got, of course, we've got the campus security cameras active. Mm-hmm. They're manned right now. We've got drones. We've got state police, multiple agencies out here: Bossier Fire, Bossier City Police, State Police, U.S. Marshals. Everyone's out here.
Is the suspect known to law enforcement? Do you know who he is, and is he considered armed and dangerous?
At this time, we do not know the identity of the suspect.
Okay.
I don't have that information. I do not currently know if he is armed or not. I do know, I believe they found a couple of guns inside the stolen vehicle. So, of course, in any situation like that where you do find a gun, you take all the necessary safety precautions you can.
So, and we know there's cameras all over campus, so hopefully that'll assist in the search.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I agree. Let's pray for the safety of all the law enforcement and first responders and the safety of the suspect, too. We want this to end peacefully if he is located out here.
Absolutely. So this is an active situation at Bossier Parish Community College. Police actively searching for a suspect. Don't know if he's armed or not, but it's been locked down. And you say all the buildings have been emptied.
Correct. Yes, sir.
All right, Sean. Thank you. We appreciate the update, and we'll stay in touch.
Yes, sir. Take care. Have a great day.
Talk to you soon. Mike and McCarty, Thomas Avalone in for Aaron. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Back with Marty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Well, Thomas Avalone in for Aaron, Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Shreveport Attorney Royal Alexander joining us. Royal, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Good morning, Lewis.
This is Thomas.
It's the other one, Royal.
Oh, Thomas.
I know it's you hear Avalone, Tom. But
it's a fair assumption to make.
Okay, Thomas.
And he sounds exactly like Lewis, so he's easy to do. Royal, Supreme Court yesterday heard the case. Is there going to be more testimony on the Louisiana redistricting, or have they concluded the testimony and now taking it into consideration? What's this? Where are we on that?
A ton of material has been submitted at both from the parties and what we call amicus briefs, friends of the court briefs. And so the Supreme Court, and this is the second briefing of this issue. It could have been decided a year ago, but the court wanted to hear whether or not specifically this map violated the 14th Amendment or the 15th Amendment. Of course, the 14th is equal protection. The 15th Amendment will prohibit denying the right to vote based on race. So the 15th Amendment is what gave rise to the Voting Rights Act. And it's really, there's a collision right now of two laws. One is a federal statute, the Voting Rights Act, Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. And the other is the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. And the reason there's a collision of the two laws is because the Voting Rights Act won't allow for the dilution, for the weakening of minority voting power. That's the Voting Rights Act. But the 14th Amendment, the Equal Protection Clause, says that may be, but you can't draw those districts based on race. So on the one hand, and so states like Louisiana, guys, get sued every time we have a census because Louisiana, like every state does, tries to abide by the Voting Rights Act. But when you do, you end up with a district like Congressman Cleo Field's district that starts outside of Baton Rouge, bounces over to outside of Lafayette, up to Shreveport, outside of Alexandria. It's almost like that Z district Mr. Fields had 30 years ago.
It looks like an F1 track if you look at it. I mean, it's just all over the place. They were even laughing at it on Fox News last night. Laura Ingraham had somebody on. They were talking about the Supreme Court hearing the case, and they brought up the district, and she goes, "Look at this district." It was embarrassing.
It was. And
they've tried strenuously to argue. And again, our legislature passed that map, and, you know, our attorney general has an obligation to defend it, which she has done the whole time. If you look at that map, even if you now, again, race can be a factor. Race just cannot be the pretty much the only factor or the predominant factor. Race and people's demographics and whether or not you're agricultural or an oil and gas area or like those coal chemical plants on the Mississippi River. There's so many different interests in Louisiana. To lump them together in that district that, you know, that they're laughing about, the one Mr. Fields is in, you really struggle to find another reason other than race, finding enough minority voters to justify it. Well, and I think that's what.
And they brought up an interesting point last night, Royal, talking to Royal Alexander, that Republican and Democrat doesn't always necessarily mean black and white.
It doesn't. And that's a form of racism itself.
Exactly.
And that point was made at oral arguments. Those are just, and our attorney general has argued, you know, five times herself before the United States Supreme Court, which I can't ever imagine doing. I think that would be awesome. The high point of an attorney's career to argue before the
right.
But she, but that's one of the points that always gets brought out. You're assuming that a group of a racial or a gender class all votes the same or thinks the same. And that's a form of racism itself. So but I love when Louisiana it has a case, and occasionally we do before the Supreme Court, this Calais case, C-A-L-L-A-I-S, Calais v. Louisiana. And but the reason this is such a, really it's going to be an historic case is because if what a lot of us suspect they're going to do, I think Chief Justice Roberts, he just wants to get out of the business of using race in anything, college admissions.
Ah, hallelujah.
Congressional redistricting. He's made comments like, it's a sordid business, this divvying us up by race. It's a sordid business, divvying us up by race. A lot of people agree with that. And
then when you have comments by Justice Jackson, who was saying a black Democrat won't vote for a white candidate and white Democrats won't vote for a black Democrat candidate. It's like, seriously? You're actually saying that? Did Barack Obama get reelected and was president twice? Was that all nothing but black voters?
I was surprised by her questions, but in a way, I appreciate her honesty because I think that's how she thinks. But I disagree. I have people, we have white friends, Mike, who are Democrats and vote for the Democrat every single time. And I know I have good friends who vote for Republicans all the time who are black. You're just, you can't assume maybe like that. And I think it weakens the argument that, and strengthens the argument that we need to do away with race. Totally. I mean, we've had it for 40 or 45 years now, back to the Bakke case in 1978, the original form of affirmative action in college admissions. And then it went to a number of different areas. But it's, and another thing Chief Justice Roberts said was, and think about the way he said this. He said, the way to stop discrimination in law is to stop discriminating in law. In other words, it just seems so simple.
It's very so, exactly.
And he said, we've had this in our country for a long time. Whatever the problem may have been 40 or 45 years ago in the United States, we've come a long way. At some point, there has to be set provision in this affirmative action or these racial preferences. At some point, we really have to just set in clause. Everyone. So what that would mean here, Mike, is you just have generally compact congressional districts. You don't have one like Congressman Fields. New Orleans is one chunk. The Baton Rouge area across. Lafayette is its own area. Every part of Louisiana is generally a compact congressional district.
Right. Royal, thank you so much. We appreciate your input.
Okay, guys. Thank you.
Talk to you soon. Micah McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710. Keith.
Get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
All right, I'm changing gears, way changing gears this morning. Thomas Avalone, Lewis's brother, comically referred to as...
The other one. Right. It's just fine.
Because you sound a lot like Lewis.
That's what I hear. I hear that, you know, particularly since he began talking on the radio regularly. I guess I could use that to get him in trouble.
Yeah, there you go.
Done this whole show as Lewis. Who knows what Lewis may have said.
That's true. I could have just said that's right. Lewis. Today is National Department Store Day.
Of course. I look forward to it all year.
Right. I got to thinking, and I saw some footage. We don't have a Nordstrom's or a Macy's, but Dillard's
right.
and Penny's.
Right.
And I was thinking, when's the last time you were ever even in a department store?
Do you mean a store that's in a mall, or does a store?
Well, just a department store, like a Penny's.
Gosh, it's
they're mostly all in malls now.
It's been a while.
I think
it has been a while. I think I might go and buy a pair of jeans every now and then at the JCPenney in South Shreveport. If that counts, is that a JCPenney or a
Dillard's?
Where
is that?
There where DSW is.
Uri.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, department stores are, you know, y'all have talked quite a bit on the show about malls and the way malls have gone.
Well, and that's it. The last time I was in a department store, when my daughter lived in Dallas, we were over there, and I think it must have been around Christmas time.
Right. Yeah,
because we love to go to one of the large malls there,
mm-hmm.
and we love to just walk around
right.
and people watch.
Right. Yeah, we were in Dallas not too long ago, and we made a couple of stops at malls. And, of course, you know, as is often discussed, you know, malls are not what they once were. I was quite surprised at, you know, several of the malls in the Dallas area, just how empty they are. And what I noticed, including the mall that I worked with way back when at the Apple store, it was the Willow Bend Mall in Plano, Texas, which even at that time, 20 years ago, there was some idea that it was a little too high end for its own good as far as traffic and keeping it full. But we made a couple of stops at malls, and I mean, they're, you know, it's, I would describe, you know, a few of them as ghost town. What I observed about it is that a lot of them have kind of pivoted toward featuring like Legoland
more or specialty
Crayola
items.
World.
Yeah.
It's kind of like these little mini theme
amusement parks
in the
yeah.
mall that we brought our kids to. But
now you have a 20-year history with, well, longer than that, with Apple, with Mac.
Mm-hmm.
You had Maccentric.
Mm-hmm.
It was a retail repair center, a Mac authorized.
An authorized service provider.
Service provider.
Repair work.
And we got 30 seconds.
Sure.
Do you ever see us getting an Apple store here?
I really don't. I think that Apple has very specific notions about the markets that they hit with an Apple store. They tend to hit larger markets with maybe a higher degree of disposable income on average than we have.
Because I thought the Boardwalk would have been a great location.
Well,
for
sure,
one.
Sure. I think that, you know, even way back
not today,
when,
but back in the day.
Right. I think way back when I was working at the Apple store, there was some idea, you know, there it can't be too long before we maybe get one of these in Shreveport and maybe I'll move home and work there. But here we are 25 years later. And I don't really know that we're on their radar. You know, Maccentric, we were located for many years in shops at Bellmead. I often thought, you know,
yeah,
that was a good fit for us because
right.
I always could see an Apple store being there.
Perfect. Thomas Avalone, thanks for coming in this morning.
No problem.
And
thank
you'll,
you.
You'll join us tomorrow as well.
I will be here bright and early.
Sounds great. Dark and early, as Ruben says.
That's right.
Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, and on the free Keel app.